Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. In this episode, I speak to trailblazing entrepreneur Marissa Carter.
You know, I was talking to my husband about it, Ronan, there last night, saying, oh, you know, I'm doing my first interview in 3 years and I'm really nervous.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And you know, I don't know what I can say and what I can't say. And he just said to me, you know, just be honest. You're human and it's upsetting and it's traumatic and it's, you know, it's been awful. There have been some really, really hard days. And just be honest about that, and you know, and people will understand. Like, no one's going to expect you to go on there and be like, oh yeah, everything's great and it's all fabulous. And
yeah,
you know, it's been it's been the hardest couple of years of my life trying to find a resolution.
Marissa lives in Dublin with her husband Ronan and their kids Charlie, who's 10, and Isabel, who's 7, and their much loved dog Cherry. Her brand Coco Brown was born 10 years ago this month, and like all successful entrepreneurs, she's not afraid of taking chances. The past few years have been particularly challenging for her professionally, and in this conversation she tells us about her upbringing and how she became the businesswoman she is today, the women who helped her along the way, meeting Kim Kardashian, and conflict. She's a homebird who loves gardening, and she's also a great laugh to be around. Here it is. Back in 2019, this podcast kicked off, and I had a list of people that I wanted to talk to, you know, and you were very much in that list.
Aww.
It's taken me a long time to finally ask you to be a guest, but I'm delighted that you were so accommodating.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. Well, this is my first interview in 3 years.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And you've had a lot going on. Okay.
Yeah.
Before we get to all of that, let's go back, because I remember one night when you were actually on the Late Late and you were speaking about your backstory, and I always knew you were really impressive. I always knew you had such a lovely warmth about you. I'm sure I used to go to Carter Beauty in Black Rock. Your salon. I used to go in and get the nails done and the brows done and all that. But hearing, you know, I suppose your childhood, where you came from, was even more impressive, because you're the eldest of 8 kids.
8, yeah. Eldest of 8. My mum was 17 when she had me. My dad was 18. So they were very much babies, yeah, when I came along. Big surprise for everybody. And I suppose, you know, back in the 80s, they were smack bang in the middle of a big recession. And my parents were lucky to be to get a house, to be given a house by the council in Whitechurch in Rathfarnham. And that's where I grew up. And being the eldest of eight kids has definitely shaped who I am, and in a really good way. And I've always loved being the eldest, you know, being the second mammy in the house, and that kind of role, that leadership role, in my family is something that I think has helped me in my leadership roles in my own businesses for sure. Yeah.
And I think we forget sometimes, like, I know you're younger than me.
Not too much, no.
Yeah, but you are.
A couple of years. Yeah. I'm 39.
Which is not even 40 yet. And look what you've achieved in your life, you know. So you have done an awful lot, and from a young age. So let's now move into when you decided on beauty as a career and how that happened.
Yeah, so it didn't happen. I didn't finish my Leaving Cert and go straight into beauty. I went to DIT Ainger Street and did management and marketing with French, a degree course there. And after at the end of first year, I failed, I think it was 4 out of my 7 end of year exams. And I got a big shock because I'd always done really, really well in school. My parents placed a huge emphasis on education. And, I went to Cluais Síosagán, the Irish school there in Booterstown. And, everyone there seems to just do really well. Like, they get really good Leaving Cert results, and everyone goes on to, you know, we had our 20 year school reunion there a couple of weeks ago, and everyone's doing well. Yeah.
But I mean, everybody would have known what you were doing. Was it mad to see people that maybe you hadn't seen since your school days?
Yeah, it was. It really was. Yeah. But I just thought everyone looked the same. But it was great to see so many people doing really well and being really happy. Lovely. But yeah, so when I failed those exams, it was a big shock to me. I don't know why I was shocked, because I never went to any of the classes, never went to any of the lectures. No, I absolutely had a hooly. I mean, when I went, I didn't have rag week. I'm pretty sure I had rag year. I think I had, do you know what I think happened? I think I'd had such a strict upbringing. You know, my mum and dad were really strict. I mean, really strict now, Sheila. Like, okay. Very, very
strict.
What
are we talking?
No, I literally wasn't allowed to do anything. Like, anything, any freedom I had was ill-gotten. You know,
right.
It wasn't approved of in any way, shape or form. And so when I moved out of home and I went to college, I went wild.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, loose.
Yeah.
And of course, then I paid the price and I failed all my exams at the end of first year of college. But I remember saying, right, I'm going to take a year out because I'm just not ready. You know, I'm just not ready to hunker down. And I got a job working as a receptionist in a beauty college at the bottom of Grafton Street, the Galligan Beauty Group. And while I was working there, I asked the two principals, listen, is there any chance that I could take the nighttime, the part-time beauty therapy course? I know the class is full, you know, there's 14 students in a class and I know the class is full, but is there any chance I can squeeze in as the 15th student? Only problem is I don't have the money to pay for it, pay for the course. And I think, you know, it's a couple of grand. And they said, they agreed, they let me in on it. So for the first time, but Brilliant. Definitely not the last, nowhere near the last time, I would owe a great deal of my success to the generosity of other women. So, to this day, I'm still in contact with Lorraine and Karina Galligan and those principals of the college. And, you know, they were huge, huge influence on me.
And I know, see, it's what is lovely about you as well is that I know that because you had those opportunities and because you were brave enough to ask, and then they saw perhaps potential and gave you an opportunity or simply maybe just liked you, you now are somebody who does pay it forward. You're big into being a mentor for people and helping when you can, which I suppose if you never lose sight of that, that's good, because I suppose that's the wheels of karma kind of working, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, for a couple of years, and I haven't in recent years, but I'm getting back involved now and going for growth this year. But yeah, for a couple of years, I was a mentor voluntarily on the Going for Growth program with Paula Fitzsimons, where I was leading 8 entrepreneurs in their journey, yeah, for a couple of years. And that was just, oh, it was amazing. And again, it's lovely to stay in contact. You know, we have our WhatsApp groups, we stay in contact and keep each other going. And just that network of support is really important. Yeah, I mean, I do try, like, I'm trying to teach my daughter, actually. I've a five-year-old, she's gonna kill me, she's 7 in my head, she's 4. Oh, I wish she was 4. I don't want her to grow up. She's 7, but I'm trying to teach my 7-year-old daughter that it's okay to say no. You know, it's
yeah,
she really feels things, you know. Like, she came home there on Friday and she said to me, oh mom, it's really sad, you know, there's a little girl in her class and she's sitting at another table and mom, no one will help her with the work, and they're getting annoyed with her because she keeps asking everybody to help her, she can't do the work. And I said, oh, you know, well, what does the teacher say? Mom, the teacher always says ask your buddy first, you know, who the person you're sitting beside, ask them for help first and then ask the teacher. But mom, she's too afraid to ask the teacher. Now, I'm sure if the teacher heard this, she'd be saying, ask me. That's what I'm here for. And, you know, my little girl, Bibi, I call her, even though her name is Isabel. She said, but mom, no one's helping her. And they're getting annoyed because she's asking for help all the time. And I was saying to her, well, you know, you have to understand that it could be annoying, you know, it could be difficult for the people that are sitting beside her because they're trying to get their work done, sweetheart. So you have to understand where they're coming from as well.
Yeah.
It's okay. You know, you might not always be able to help everyone. Now, I'm trying to teach her that because I know that her natural instinct is to want to be there and help everybody, and that sometimes is to her detriment, you know. I'm trying to teach her okay to sometimes not be able to give enough of yourself to everyone, and that's a lesson I think I'm trying to teach her, because I've probably learned, you know, in the last couple of years I've learned it myself that there is a limit as well to how much energy you know, you have as a human being, and sometimes you have to limit the amount of yourself that's available.
We're after skipping forward, but let's deal with it now for the moment, because I know that, you know, even with your social media, I love your Instagram account. Your reels are really funny. I love your content on, you know, be it gardening or interiors or whatever it is as well, alongside, you know, the beauty content that you obviously share, which is great. But you did take a break. You did take a break from social. And I know that from listening to you before, you felt maybe an obligation to engage in all the messages that you got. But I suppose, you know, there are only so many hours in the day.
There are only so many hours in the day. And I think as a creative person, I need to daydream, and I need to potter, and I need to, you know, flit around. I need, you know, I need to be peaceful and quiet and have solitude and regenerate on my own. That's, you know, some people get energy from being around others.
Yeah.
And that rejuvenates them. Whereas what rejuvenates me is definitely much more solitude and just peace and quiet and no noise. And maybe that comes from being, you know, growing up in such a loud and vivacious and so much energy. I mean, I have five brothers.
Yeah.
And I've two sisters, but like even one of my sisters, for the first 10 years of her life, she was asking Santa Claus for a willy.
Stop.
But that's how masculine our house was. You know?
Sorry. I was not expecting you to say that. That is so funny. Oh, bless.
But that's how much testosterone was in that house, you know? So
were you a tomboy growing up then?
I don't know. I think I'm probably... No, look, I mean, I'm very feminine. I am very feminine.
So you're always
person.
Very girly.
I was always very girly.
Yeah.
But that said, I do know that I'm made of tough stuff,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
and maybe part of that as well is that I grew up in an area that you kind of needed to be pretty street smart. You know, you knew what corners you couldn't, you know, you shouldn't walk past. You knew that there was a high, you know, level of crime. You know, you saw the Gardaí coming into the estate on the daily nearly. You know, you just, it wasn't always safe. You know, there were plenty of times where, you know, you might get beaten up just going to the shop. And you kind of, you know, you get a bit tough. And I went to, the school that I went to, I was known as, like, my friends used to laugh and slag me and call me, call me all sorts of names that I wouldn't actually repeat now because I'd probably get in trouble. But at home I was known as the posho. And then in school it was the opposite. So I didn't really fit in perfectly in school because I was a little bit rough around the edges.
Right.
And tougher than most of the other people in the class, even though I was absolutely the smallest by an extraordinary mile. Then at home I was didn't quite fit in either because I was posh, too posh. I was too posh for where I lived and I was too much of a, you know, whatever to fit in perfectly at school. But that did make me, you know, quite resilient and quite tough. And it actually stood to me when I started playing basketball in school because I was absolutely fierce compared to the other girls on the team because they, you know, they'd probably never been in a scrap.
Okay.
You know, whereas like I'd had the head boxed off me from a very young age out on the road. So I was, I learned to be tough. So
yeah.
Probably.
So even though you wouldn't maybe physically, naturally, you wouldn't think be suited to basketball.
No.
But
basically, don't come at me, Sheila. I'll kill you.
Oh, and I suppose as well, because of that, it gave you that, I suppose, the guts to ask, can I do this course? You know, somebody else might have felt too shy or too uncomfortable to ask, but you were like, no, I see an opportunity here. And all they can, I suppose, maybe I'm wondering, was it a case of, well, all they can say is no?
Yeah, I mean, I think I faced the sort of shame of not having, you know, all the things that, you know, my friends in school had just even as an example, in fourth year, you know, all my friends went off and went on the trips. Like, you know, they went to Strasbourg or Strasbourg in Germany or France, wherever it is. And I didn't go. And the only reason I didn't go was because my parents couldn't afford to send me.
That
was hard. You know, that was tough. It was tough missing out on those things.
And you're that age, what age are you then? You're probably
like 15.
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah,
all my friends are heading off. But you kind of just had to get on with it, you know? You did just have to get on with it. So I think by the time I by the time I was, you know, 19, I was kind of, you know, I was kind of over that shame. I was like, oh, if I, you know, I'm going to have to ask if I want to do this course, the only way I'm going to be able to do it is if they let me do it and don't charge me for it. And yeah, you kind of just...
You go for it.
You go for it. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, how many times have we heard the most amazing speakers, you know, motivational speakers who will have similar stories to tell where maybe they didn't, you know, they didn't come for money or they, you know, opportunity didn't come their way or they had obstacles to overcome because what does it build? The word you already used, resilience.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're a grafter. You've had that in you, haven't you?
Yeah.
Just work hard for it.
Yeah.
And I suppose as well have a belief that, you know, I'm going to do this.
Yeah. Deluded, some say.
But clearly not.
There's a fine line.
Because you've brought it to reality. So anyway, so you did this course and what? Was there something about this went, this is where I'm meant to be. Okay.
Yeah. I just...
Good luck to those failed exams.
Yeah.
This is where I'm meant to be.
Yeah. The passion that I felt for it and the thirst and the hunger I had to be the best, you know, I absolutely aced my exams. I think I was one of three students in the whole college. I think there was 150 students in total and there were three of us that got, you know, over 90% in all 13 modules and I was one of them. And, you know, the college asked me then, would I come back as a, you know, an assistant to the tutor?
Oh, right.
So I ended up working in the college during the day for another 2 years and then working alongside the head tutor, Annette, teaching the class with her, the beauty class with her. And that was amazing. But I knew I wasn't going to stay too long. You know, I was there to learn. I was there to pick up as much knowledge and experience as I could. But then I wanted, oh my God, I wanted out that door just to start my own thing.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted my own business and I saved €2,500 and I asked Bank of Ireland for a loan for €2,500. So with €5,000 in total, I had enough money to take out a lease above a hair salon and start what was Carter Beauty Salon for 8 years. Yeah.
Wow. And yeah, because like... I would imagine starting your own business, while we might have dreams and desires to do it, actually making it a reality is a different thing. So, you know, there were other elements of, you may have learned a lot through your beauty training, but I would imagine the business side, was that something that you learned as you went?
Yeah, and probably quite badly as well. You know, it didn't, like, again, there is... I know that my biggest strength is also sometimes my biggest weakness. I'm well aware of this.
Right.
And it's the confidence that I don't know how to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I'm going to be really, really good at it. In fact, I'm going to be the best and I'll be well able. Now, my mum always said to me, Marissa, you're well able. If I said to her, I can't do it, you're well able.
Mm.
She drilled that into me. But so much so that if something doesn't work out, I am shocked.
Okay.
And I mean shocked to the core. Like it took me 3 attempts to pass my driving test. And I genuinely each time was so sure I was going to go and I was going to pass that test. No bother. No bother. No, doesn't work like that. And I thought, you know what? I am going to do my own accounts.
Okay.
I was a straight A math student. What do I need a bookkeeper for?
Right.
Well, 7 years later, darling, you're going to learn that the revenue actually You made loads of mistakes.
Oh, God.
You are about to have your first, you're a month away from having your first child. And you owe us, little Missy, an absolute fortune because you did your own bookkeeping and you did not do a good job of it. You made loads of mistakes and here's your revenue bill.
Oh, mother of God. So what? Before Charlie was born?
Yeah.
Oh, you poor thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So overconfidence, you know, is
I can imagine the stress.
Sometimes you pay a price. I'm joking about it now, but actually, no, in all honesty,
I'm sure
Sheila,
at the time it wasn't fun.
It wasn't fun. It really wasn't. You. I genuinely thought, wonder what the crack is with having a baby in prison. Like,
stop.
I did though. I really was thinking, I'm never going to be able to pay this revenue bill.
Oh, God love you. Right.
Yeah.
And 10 years ago was the beginning of Cocoa Brown as well.
Yeah.
So it was all happening at the one time.
Yeah.
You were starting off this new brand.
Yeah. Well, I got the revenue bill. I got the revenue bill, I think, in around the time of my birthday. So I got the revenue bill in, say, the February of 2012. Charlie was born in March 2012 and Cocoa Brown launched November. Yeah.
So was Cocoa Brown, in the planning stages mm-hmm. when revenue came knocking?
No.
It came after.
Yeah.
And was that a driver? Was that so I've learned a big lesson here. What am I going to do now?
No, not really. I saw an opportunity. So, I always told myself, you never ever know what's around the corner.
Hang in there.
Hang in there. You never know what's around the corner. And that, you know, to this day, that still sometimes is what gets me out of bed in the morning. I think, okay, you just never know. But Charlie was born. He was about 3 weeks old. And I think I've told you this story before, but I was feeding him. And I woke up the next morning and he was covered in fake tan.
Yeah.
The poor child. And I remember thinking two things. Oh my, how am I going to hide this from Ronan? And then the other thing was, oh, there has to be a better way. This spray tan thing is just a nightmare. I have to do something about this. Now, if you rewind a little bit, I don't believe any story is linear. So we do have to rewind a little bit.
Yeah.
In 2007, I had gone to Philadelphia to study a cosmetic chemistry and skin histology course. And when I went, it was with the intention of, right, when I get back to Ireland, I'm going to create my own skincare line.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. And then the recession hit in 2009 and that was, you know, the end of that.
Mm.
So I kind of had that in the back of my head the whole time. I had been dealing with a tanning manufacturer for my spray tan solution for the salon. So the connection was there, but I didn't know anything about retail. I didn't know anything about dealing with a distributor. Definitely didn't know anything about dealing with investors. But I knew that I had a customer because my salon was doing really well and spray tan was the most popular treatment in my salon. I knew my craft. So that was my starting point. Yeah. And so Cocoa Brown 1 hour tan was a formula and still is a formula that rather than having to leave it on your skin for 8 hours or overnight, you would be able to put it on, leave it on for an hour, wash off the bits of tan that were going to go all over your baby or all over your sheets. And then it would continue to develop.
Yeah.
So it would develop even though you'd had your shower and you'd cleaned off all the anything that was going to muck up the place. And having that point of difference then, you know, no one knew what a 1 hour tan was. It was just...
See, the market is saturated. Yeah, the market now is full of fake tan brands.
Yeah.
But when Cocoa Brown came on the scene, it was revolutionary.
It was. Yeah. Yeah, it really was.
It was a game changer.
It was a game changer. And, I look back now and I think, wow, Coco Brown launched into pennies in the first 6 months of being on the market.
Yeah.
So the first order was 25,000 bottles. That sold out in 9 weeks. Then the second order was 50,000 bottles, and that sold out in 5 weeks.
Okay.
We were in, so I went over, me, myself and I, over to Superdrug in the UK, pitched in the 1 hour tan to them. They didn't have any other 1 hour tan at all. No category. There was no express tan category at that time. I created a brand new little market, and they took it. And then Boots Ireland, we were the first Irish brand actually to be listed in Boots Ireland. It's kind of crazy. Actually, we were the first Irish brand to be listed in Superdrug. And then this year, Carter Beauty, my makeup brand, became the first Irish cosmetics brand to get a listing in 1,700 Walmart stores across America. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's been a wild journey.
I mean, you know, over the past 10 years, when you look back at you know, I'm sure there's been plenty of times when it didn't go according to plan, mm-hmm. but plenty of times where it did, and it was right time, right place, right time stuff. Yeah. I mean, let's talk Kardashians, Jenners. I mean, really, how does that happen? Do the most well-known women in the world and you kind of decide, okay, let's do something together here. Mm. How does that happen?
It's pretty amazing.
Isn't it?
Isn't it though? I know. It's
huge.
I am not easily starstruck, and I am not fazed by celebrity. I never have been. I've always just believed people are people.
Yeah.
You know, human beings, and we're all the same. Doesn't matter what walk of life you come from, you're still a human being, and you know, treat everyone the same. So it's taken me a little while, or in retrospect, I'm able to look back on those situations, you know, meeting Kim Kardashian, having Kylie Jenner, you know, post about Coco Brown tan. This is way before, you know, celebrities were, you know, advertising.
Yeah.
Tan, you know, all sorts of beauty products, you know, all the time. It was actually, to this day, Coco Brown is still the only tanning brand that Kylie Jenner has ever promoted. The only one.
Wow.
No other tanning brand. You know, she went on obviously to create her own cosmetics line afterwards. So now obviously the only beauty products she promotes are her own or her sister's. But that was absolutely extraordinary.
Like how did that happen?
So it's the sort of getting into the US market started when Coco Brown, when we were the official sponsors for the tan at the Oscars.
Yeah.
Now, I had seen that Saint-Tropez had been doing that for years. But there were no Irish brands over there doing that. And I got an email from the organizer, and I don't think I paid any attention to it, the first email. And then a second email came in. I thought, is this for real? You know, am I trying to be someone trying to scam me here?
Yeah.
But then I Googled the company and the name, and it seemed, oh, hold on a second. These guys are legit.
Yeah.
And they, you know, it's just mad. We went over, myself and a gang of my team. We went over, and we had, you know, there was Sandra Bullock in the lobby and Matthew McConaughey in getting his spray tan. And actually, I was very disappointed.
Oh, go on. Why?
Because I had the biggest celebrity crush on Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
But he had just done Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah, bless. I know. An amazing, amazing movie. But
oh my goodness.
What he did to himself physically.
Physically.
Yeah. So you saw him in that.
I saw him in that.
Right. Rather than the...
And it ruined...
How to lose a guy in 10... Okay.
All future fantasies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No more.
Yeah. They say you should never meet... Yeah.
No.
Don't... No. You should never... You shouldn't actually ever meet your, you know...
People you want to write.
Yeah, basically. Sheila!
I said it. Yeah, okay. So
it started there. Right, and okay. And I ended up at... I went to two big events. I went to Elton John's Oscar party, where who was there? Everyone. Britney Spears was there. The Kardashians were there. I was sitting next to Brad Pitt's agent.
Right.
And he said to me, "Oh, are you attending the?" I think it was. It was a Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton fundraiser the following evening that apparently everyone else at this table was going to. And I said, oh, no, no, no. And he said, well, would you like to attend with my wife and I? And I said, absolutely. I'll keep her in tan for the rest of her life. And so I attended that, and I just stayed in contact with quite a few people in LA, and I made contact with a lady who was spray tanning Kylie Jenner and all the Kardashians at the time.
Yeah,
she was their number one go-to for spray tanning, and I started supplying her with cocoa bread.
Very good.
Yeah. So I was sending her over liters and liters of cocoa bread spray tan. And this went on for about 7-8 months.
Right.
And I knew, I was like, this, you know, it's gonna happen.
Yeah.
One of the Kardashians, they are going to, you know, they're gonna thank us. They're going to thank Coco Brown for all this tan we're giving them. And I just didn't know when it was going to happen.
But you knew it was going to happen.
But I knew it was going to happen. There was no guarantee. There was no guarantee.
Yeah.
But I just knew it's going to happen. They're going to do it. And then Kylie put it up on her Instagram, and I was putting my little fella, Charlie, I was putting him to bed. I think he was 3 at the time.
Mm.
And my phone just, oh my gosh.
Exploded.
Yeah. It was actually quite overwhelming. I did turn my phone off, I think, for about 3 days after it happened, because, the brand, but also me personally, I had never had that many people trying to get in contact with me at one time.
Everybody wants
literally
you.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone. But it was wild. And that changed Coco Brown's trajectory.
Massively.
Hugely.
Yeah.
Massively. We were then able to get meetings with retailers in the US that would never have given us the time of day. If that hadn't happened. And then afterwards, of course, then, you know, we got Kris Jenner's email address, and then we were, you know, working with their makeup artists and getting all of our products, into their hands. So after that, we worked with Kim Kardashian and her makeup artist Mario to sponsor some of the masterclasses that they were doing. And I met her in New York.
I've seen those fab photos. Tell me.
It was fab. Oh, she's ridiculously beautiful. Oh, sickeningly so. Yeah. No, she's gorgeous. She's absolutely tiny.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely tiny.
Yeah.
And minuscule and just beautiful, really now. Gorgeous.
And as, I suppose, personality-wise, is it exactly what we see? Or?
I don't think... you know, celebrities of that level, who is their guard ever down?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah.
I
getcha. But I can only begin to imagine, you know, standing beside her, somebody who I suppose is, she's become such an icon and almost not real.
Yeah.
In the sense that.
Dehumanized.
Yeah.
Almost.
But
yeah.
Then she's standing in front of you. It must be kind of really strange.
Yeah. It's the only time I've ever been truly starstruck.
Yeah.
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 But you know what? We're still human.
Yeah.
You know, you got to just remind yourself of that. And you know what? You have to remind yourself of that when you are, you know, in business, if you're meeting a big retailer or you're meeting an investor or you're meeting, who, you know, somebody that you are naturally going to feel a little bit intimidated or afraid of meeting them. You kind of do just have to remind yourself, at the end of the day, they're human.
Yeah.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
And I'm just thinking at the beginning of Coco Brown. So at the beginning of Coco Brown, you have a small baby. And then like 3 years later, number two arrives. So you're managing being a mum to very young kids and running a really successful and very demanding business.
Yeah.
It's a lot going on.
Yeah. And a lot of travel. For me, the travel has and always will be the hardest part because I really don't enjoy getting on airplanes. It gives me a lot of anxiety and I really don't enjoy leaving the children.
Yeah.
I find it very, very difficult. I'm getting on a plane and I'm leaving the kids for the first time in 3 years.
Really?
Yeah, I'm leaving them. Now they're being minded by their granny. Nana Didi is gonna come and mind them. But I do find that very stressful, irrationally so, you know. I probably need therapy, actually, to deal with my fear of leaving the children at home. It's bad.
Is it mammy guilt?
Yeah, it's a bit of mammy guilt, but it just doesn't feel, you know, it almost just doesn't feel rational.
Okay.
You know, it's panic and fear and also it's horrible, but I'm doing it. And you know what? I think I've had to accept that you can feel afraid, you can feel fear, you can actually feel panic and you can feel anxiety and you can feel all of those things and then you can still do it. You can still get on the plane and you can still go do what you need to do.
Yeah.
So I'm getting on a plane next week and I'm going to Istanbul to find and try and source a cosmetic manufacturer on this side of the world, because I really don't want to have to be going east for manufacturing. It's too far.
Yeah,
you know, the travel is too much. So if I can find a manufacturer closer to home, That would be fabulous.
And this is for the your cosmetics
brand? This is
for
Carter Beauty, yeah, for cosmetics, yeah. Coco Brown is made in the UK, which obviously with Brexit now, that has its own, that's its own nightmare. But yeah, still a lot easier than East, China and Korea.
So the pandemic, it changed all our lives so hugely. And while things are in a sense, there's an element of back to normal, things have changed. And I actually think a lot of things have changed for the better. Mm. You know, I mean, we were voice noting each other back and forth, and you were saying, you know, the meetings before where you would have had to get on a plane and travel halfway across the world to have, now, luckily, it's opened up to Zoom meetings, and it's actually far more efficient, I think, with our time. And it's more conducive to those of us who want to spend time with family members or whatever it might be. So it has its pluses, I would imagine, for you.
It really does. I mean, during the pandemic and the lockdowns, I spent, and actually even now, because I'm still working from home, I spent every single lunch break out in the garden. Mm. And it is incredible the amount of work that you can get done and the change that you can just what you can get done in the garden in an hour a day is incredible. And I've really, really enjoyed every minute that I have spent out with the plants in the garden. Yeah. Oh, I could easily now, happily just spend all of my time in the garden. All of it. Once the kids were there with me.
Mm.
But I love it. I love plants.
Is gardening like a meditation for you?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big time. And I mean, I joke and say that the boot of my car at this stage probably needs to be weeded. And there's so much soil in it. But what it has get, you know, what gardening has done for my mind, for my well-being, you know, everything, even physically, you know.
Yeah.
It's been such a sanctuary and an escape. And when times have been really stressful or really upsetting or, you know, just at very, very low periods in the last couple of years, the garden has been a respite, and it's been somewhere where I can just retreat to and not think about work and just go out there
switch off with the kids
and completely switch off. Mm. Yeah.
We need that, don't we?
We do. Yeah.
Like you've touched on it there. So I suppose we have to kind of mention it because some time ago, you did speak on your own Instagram page in a very emotional way.
Yeah.
And I completely appreciate that there's a lot you cannot speak about.
Yeah.
For legal reasons. But for those who perhaps are hearing about it for the first time, mm-hmm. in a nutshell, there is a period of change, of uncertainty
conflict.
Going on. Conflict. That's mm-hmm. the word. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
And this is with the Coco Brown brand.
Yes, Coco Brown brand. So I have two brands. One is Coco Brown, which is fake tan, and one is Carter Beauty, which is cosmetics. And for one of those businesses, Coco Brown, I have investors. And in the last couple of years, the relationship has broken down and there is conflict. And we are trying to resolve it in a way that it is the best outcome for Coco Brown by Marissa Carter, for Coco Brown, the brand. And, you know, I see myself, like Coco Brown is my baby.
Well, it wouldn't exist without you.
Well, exactly.
So.
You know, and it's become, so much of my identity is wrapped up in you know, Coco Brown and the work and the sacrifice and the blood, sweat and tears that went into building Coco Brown into the brand that it is today. And, you know, if I can tell you a story, very short one, but I was in Hickey's a couple of years ago, and a woman came up to me and she said, young woman, she came up to me and she said, oh, are you Marissa? And I went, yeah, Marissa Coco Brown. And she went, oh, no, Marissa Colleen Carter's sister. Well, she put manners on me. She knew my sister. But straight away in my head, you know, if someone says to me, are you?
Yeah.
I'm automatically thinking, yeah, I'm Marissa Coco Brown. Yeah, I'm Marissa. Yeah, the pink bottle, the tan.
It's so wrapped up in your identity.
It's so, such a huge part of my identity, of who I am. But yeah,
that's why this must be so difficult then.
Yeah. And I was talking to my husband about it, Ronan, there last night, saying, oh, you know, I'm doing my first interview in 3 years and I'm really nervous. And I don't know what I can say and what I can't say. And he just said to me, you know, just be honest. You're human and it's upsetting and it's traumatic and it's, you know, it's been awful. There have been some really, really hard days. And just be honest about that. And people will understand, like, no one's going to expect you to go on there and be like, oh yeah, everything's great and it's all fabulous. And
yeah,
you know, it's been the hardest couple of years of my life trying to find a resolution and come out the other side of it and you know, have my dignity intact and have my confidence intact and my identity, have all of those things. And you know, I do feel that it's not just me that I would be letting down if I don't, you know, come out of this on top.
Yeah.
That there is other people that are in, you know, they see what Coco Brown means something to a lot of people, I think. And they tell me that, you know, that they've used it since they were 13 and they, you know, they know the story, they know how it started, they've been there the whole time. It's their go-to tan and it represents something to people. And I think what it represents is it represents, you know what, she's not that great. If she can do it, I can do it. You know what I mean? Marissa Carter is not some genius. She's not some, you know, she didn't come from loads of money and you know what I mean?
They just think. Yeah.
Do you know I can do it too. Yeah, I can do it too. You don't have to be.
Yeah, it's so much more than just fake tan.
Yeah.
I suppose what it stands for. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know what the future holds. I don't know. There are no guarantees. There is just no guarantees that everything's going to be okay. But again, I still have that mindset. I'm still that Egypt going into her driving test, you know, for the third time thinking, oh yeah, I'm definitely going to get it this time, you know, but I do have that mindset of things will work out.
What did your mom say to you again?
You're well able.
Well able.
You are well able. Yeah, that's what she says to me.
Yeah.
She still says that to me.
Great. You know, when you were talking about having to turn the phone off when, you know, Kylie Jenner, posted about Coco Brown and what a massive moment that was for the brand and how, I suppose, in this line of work, in the media business, you know, there's an element of everyone wants you when everything's going well. And then sometimes it's like tumbleweeds.
Yeah.
Because we all go through it. It's life. Yeah. You can't always be at a high.
Yeah. No.
It's not possible to sustain that all the time. It's also, it wouldn't really be good for anybody to probably operate on that high level all the time. But has that been strange as well, where, as you said, perhaps this is the first interview, proper sit-down interview in 3 years, I'm sure it's had its perks not to have had that kind of media spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
But has it been strange?
It has been strange, but it has mostly absolutely bloody feckin' fabulous.
Yeah.
You know? I am the class rep for the Parents Association for my kids. I mean,
yeah.
I just, you know, I am a granny at heart. Like, you know, I love being home. Mm. I love not being on a plane. I love that I can do Zoom meetings instead of having to jump on a plane. And, you know, there is something lovely about just leading a simpler life. Mm. Yeah. You know, but that said, oh, I'm so ambitious, you know,
yeah.
I'm so ambitious. I'm so driven. You know, I always want to be first. I always want to be the best. There's a competitiveness in me that has always been in me that will be there forever. And have you heard that saying, that expression, how you do anything is how you will do everything?
Mm, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, that's me, whether I'm the class rep or whether I'm...
You're going to give it your all.
Yeah, I'm going to give it my all. Yeah, like the weeds are afraid of me.
Yeah. So if you expect a lot of yourself, do you expect a lot of others as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a very tight circle.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very, very tight circle of friends. I've, you know... A couple of friends that I've made, say, in the last 10, 15 years. And then I have four girlfriends that have been my best friends since I was 4 years old.
Mm, and they know you.
And they know me.
Inside out.
Inside out. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Inside out. And I think we all do have high expectations of each other. You know, we trust each other with our lives,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely. To have it those is. Yeah, it's important to have those relationships. And I think even more so now, you know, I think social media has made, you know, you meet a lot of people. You can meet some really fabulous people actually on social media. But if one thing taking a break, say, every now and then from social media has taught me is which relationships are transactional.
Mm-hmm.
And which are true connections.
Yes.
You know,
absolutely.
And that's important because, you know, who wants a relationship with anyone? You know, I don't want a friendship that's purely transactional. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, well, the only requisite I have for you to be my very good friend is that you have the same amount of followers as me on Instagram, or that you are very popular right now, or you're, you know, the next new hot thing in the industry. So let's be friends.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been very good at maintaining bonds that aren't deep.
Mm.
You know,
you don't do the small talk, the frivolous stuff.
Yeah, I mean, for work, I will. But if I'm friends with you, I want to be a real friend to you. I want you to know that you can trust me with anything. I want you to know that I'll be there for you no matter what. You know, I'll be the middle of the night shovel friend. So I don't want to have loads of friends. I'm really very, very happy just having my tight circle and then lots and lots of people around me who are mad about plants. Yeah. I'm telling you, Sheila, if you want new friends, get yourself into gardening, because plant people, I thought dog people, you see, were the best people in the world.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Cherry is... My little Bichon Frise is 13. Yeah. She's just the most fabulous thing to walk this earth.
Yeah.
But I always thought, do you know what? Dog people really are amazing. Mm. Get talking to someone who loves dogs as much as you. Poof. You know, that's a connection.
Yeah.
But plant people are mental.
Whole other level.
In a really good way. Yeah. Absolutely batshit crazy.
And come here, do you give the full Latin term?
Oh, or, yeah.
Oh, do you go all in?
Oh, all in. All in, Sheila. All in, totally, yeah. And I've made so many amazing connections. I went to Kerry last year with a pack of strangers down to a garden festival that Dermot Gavin was running. And, you know, there was a Mad Hatter tea party and there was just all sorts of shenanigans going on. And it was the time of my life. And I'd say I was the youngest person there by at least a decade.
Ah, class.
But it was amazing.
And was it the pandemic that allowed you to indulge in your passion?
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
It was amazing.
How have you changed, or have you changed, do you think, from that, you know, the young Marissa who did her first beauty course to now?
Ooh, I'm still as ambitious. I'm still as optimistic and, you know, somewhat
confident.
I'm still as confident.
Yeah.
But my priorities are, you know, when you have kids, you think, oh no, nothing's going to change. The kids are just going to, you know, come on the ride with me. Absolutely not. That's not how it works. Mm. No matter what, your kids are number one. You know, they're your priority. And as they get older, they start to really need you more. And they've got questions that they need answers to. They've got homework. Oh, so, by the way, did you know when you finish school, you're not really finished school, because if you have kids, you have to go through it all over again and you have to do all that homework all over again. So I am now in fifth class and first class all over again. And I'm doing geography as badly now as I did then. Yeah. Horrendous. But yeah, no, to answer your question, how am I different? I'm different in that I suppose success to me means something different now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you'd asked me what does success look like? If you asked me that before I had kids, I would have said, what does success like? Oh, a big mansion and, you know, being able to go on holidays X amount of times per year and, you know, be able to travel the world and all of those lovely, you know, glamorous things. Mm. And, you know, have a blow dry every day.
Yeah.
You know, now success to me is that my kids are content, they're happy, they're confident, they feel safe, they're secure, they're healthy.
Yeah.
I'm healthy. You know, the people I love are healthy. Well, there's a lot of healthy in there, isn't there?
But that's it, isn't it?
But yeah. And does that sound trite though? Probably.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. I get it. I get it completely. And it is what matters, because, you know, a lot of people, particularly those who work for themselves, whether you're an entrepreneur or you're self-employed, you can have periods where there's money in the bank and the periods where you're absolutely smashed.
Yeah.
And, you know, all you ever want is this, really, when you've experienced both ends of that.
Yeah.
Is you're just craving for a nice life, the simple stuff. And for those, as you said, people you love to be healthy and well and not be troubled.
Yeah.
Not be troubled.
Yeah.
And as you said, like your mental health has probably felt under pressure at different points in your career because of different things that have happened. And even in terms of great stuff that's happened, there would be a price to pay probably with, you know, the highs of the Oscars, the Kardashians, the Jenners. There's a high with that, but there's also then probably on the other side, you were being torn because, there was probably half of you that wanted to be somewhere else.
When I was over at the Oscars the first time, I got a phone call from my husband that he was in Crumlin Children's Hospital with Isabel. She had got her hand stuck to the radiator in the kitchen.
Oh, God.
And she had a burn on her hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when I was there the following year, she put a bit of like a bit of an old Christmas decoration in her ear.
Oh God.
And he was in the hospital with her then. So you know, both times she was okay.
Yeah, you know,
it wasn't anything life threatening. But both times that I was over at the Oscars, my little girl was in hospital.
Yeah, so you don't want to be getting those calls
no.
like when you're in another country.
No, definitely not. But yeah, like they're the they're the little things that that can be going on in the background.
Of course.
That you just you know, you just don't know. And I saw something really funny there the other day, Sheila. It was a meme or a mem, whatever you call it, on Instagram, and it was like, you know, I'm jealous of my own life. I'm jealous of myself on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, you see all the photos of the smiling and the having a great time and, you know, having a hoolie, doing this, that or whatever else. You know, you look at it and you think, Jesus, that person is living the life.
Yeah.
You know, it could be you. You could be looking at your own bloody Instagram and thinking that.
We've no idea what's going on really behind
it
all. And I mean, I suppose you're an example of that, where your content is brilliant on Instagram. You're really funny. You do a lot of reels. But then, you know, when you spoke on your page so openly and so honestly, no, like I didn't have a clue what was going on. So again, as you said, you know, a smile and a funny reel can hide a lot of the real stuff that's kind of bubbling under the surface as well. But look, it's been amazing to talk to you and to see you. I really hope that there is a resolution and that it's one that, you know, you're happy with.
Yeah.
Because I think you were saying it's November is the official 10-year anniversary of the brand.
Yeah.
Coco Brown.
Yeah.
So it's fabulous. God, it's gone by in a flash though, hasn't it?
I know. Yeah. It has. I mean, my career feels like it's gone by in a flash, but I tell you, I can't believe the kids are, they're just, you know, my eldest is 10.
Yeah.
I'm just you know, earlier I was telling you my daughter was 4, she's 7. You know, I just don't want them to get any older. And I have a young goddaughter who's 2 and a nephew who is 4. And even just seeing them, they're only, you know, they're not too much younger than my 2, but I see them every week and I'm like, oh, they're so cute and they're so young. And oh, I miss that baby phase. And, you know, I miss them being so young. I don't want them to grow up. I want time to just stand still and let them stay babies forever. But I know.
But you're enjoying it and you're drinking it up.
I really am. I mean, there's definitely, I feel, you know, I'm 39 now and I do kind of feel, you know, you start to get a little bit panicky and you think, okay, you know, there's, time is ticking away and you're thinking to yourself, wow, you know, if there was another little, you know, baby on the, you know, how amazing would that be? And oh, it'd be just so lovely. But, you know, my husband, his favorite way of, you know, he's very romantic and he might say to me, any chance of a booby? And I'll just look at him and say, any chance of a baby? And that's it. That's the end of it. There's nothing going to happen. There is absolutely no action. Because he's like, absolutely not. We are, you know, our lives are full. And I do agree with him, really. I do think, you know, I'm so happy and blessed. I'm so content. I do love having my boy and my girl. Yeah.
And I know we haven't even spoken about it. We won't go into it now because we're wrapping up the conversation. But even before, you know, you guys conceived Charlie, you spoke very openly about your struggles.
Yeah.
And having had, was it 3 miscarriages?
3 miscarriages.
Yeah. And thank you, by the way, for speaking so openly about it, because I think it helped me. It helped a lot of people realize that when I went through my 2, that, you know, you're not on your own, and it does help people open up the conversation.
Yeah.
So I really did appreciate you being so honest.
Okay.
I know you're living the dream, really, because you know what's important. You know, you know, your life with your kids, your hobby, your brilliant career, your love of plants. But is there a new dream on top of what you've already done? Is there, are there new avenues to be explored? Is there more expansion to be, you know, expanded upon, as it were?
Oh my gosh.
Always?
I don't know. I'm very creative. And honestly, I really am just at my happiest when I'm creating product. Mm. You know, do I think, does it matter if I am creating a container plant pot or if I'm creating a new eyeshadow palette or a new tanning formula or a new, who knows? I really don't know. I just know that I'm happiest when I'm creating and making things and just sort of, yeah, creating anything beautiful. So who knows? I don't know. I kind of, do you know what? One side of me thinks, I don't want to ruin an obsession by turning it into a profession.
Okay. Okay.
You know, I saw Brad Pitt bring out, you know, a skincare line, and I so cynical and skeptical about it. I was thinking, oh my God, you know, would that guy not stay in his own lane? And, you know, there is an element of me that just thinks, do you know what? Just stay in your own lane now, Carter. Stay in the beauty industry. Little bit of that going on in the background. But who knows? Who knows? Actually, look, you never know.
Never know.
What's around the corner?
Yeah. Thank you. This has been a gem of a conversation. And yeah, I know there's a million stories you could have told, but we can't be here all day. So we have to wrap it up. Thanks a million for your time.
Thank you.
Next week, I chat to sex educator, the wonderful Jenny Keane. And if you enjoyed this episode with Marissa, please share it with friends, family, or on social media. And you can support what I do in all the usual ways by clicking follow, giving a rating, or leaving a little comment. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.